Welcome to the Movies on the Brain podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Brian C. Wood. With me tonight is my co-host, as always,
Chamit.
Welcome to another weird, wild, and wacky week in the world of genre movie news. And what a week it has been, Chad. Slow news week, huh?
It was looking slow at one point, and then, you know, stuff happened.
As tends to happen during, you know, news weeks. So let's start off with a property that is near and dear to my heart, Godzilla. So Gareth Edwards makes an okay to apparently frustrating Godzilla movie.
Very.
In 2014, with Max Bernstein as the head writer. And it kind of sets up Monarch, and there are some pieces there that you could potentially use for a sequel. And you set up the whole premise of Godzilla being a force of nature that comes up to restore balance. And then into the movie, spoilers, he goes back into the center of the Earth, into the ocean, and all is well. They are also doing a King Kong movie that was supposed to be at Universal, because that's where the Kong rights are, but they negotiated a deal to move Kong over to Warner's so that they could develop a Godzilla-Kong shared universe, which would lead to King Kong versus Godzilla 2020. This week, we found out a little bit more about Godzilla 2, the sequel to the 2015 movie that Gareth Edwards did, that will come out in 2019 and will directly set up the events of Kong versus Godzilla. And we found out that we've got a couple of writers and possibly a director. Now attached, since Gareth is taking a little hiatus after Rogue One. So your thoughts on our new writers and director for Godzilla 2?
Well, the writers would be Zach Shields and Michael Dougherty. And I don't know anything Zach Shields has done, so the name to focus on here is Michael Dougherty, who would also be directing this. I know Michael Dougherty for writing X2, X-Men Apocalypse, and Superman Returns. So, if you listen to this any time, you know that he's only bad in life. He's one out of three on these. So, I've never seen anything he directed. I know he's Krampus and Trick or Treat, two movies that I'm never ever going to watch.
Hey, Krampus is awesome. It's horrible. It's, like, outrageously funnily bad and, like, very funny. But it's a good movie. I mean, it has parts of it that are good. But, like, I understand why it made, like, $6 million. I mean, it's not a movie you're going to watch over and over and over again. It's campy to the max.
Yeah, I'm intrigued by the premise, but, you know, this whole thing of horror, I just don't kind of do horror. So that's why I'll never see either
one of those. Think Gremlins. That's essentially what it is.
Oh. It's like Gremlins, maybe. Since I know it's actually on TV right now. But probably not. I'm going to take your word for it. So I don't know what to expect of him as a director. I think he can be a fairly good writer, because as much as I don't like Superman Returns, I don't think
the writing's the problem.
No, I think they wrote the script per the direction of the director. Hence the problem. The director. We know I have lots of problems with that director. So I'm willing to give it a shot. I mean, it's Godzilla. I would say it's not hard to mess up, but then there's 1996. So.
97. And Madison Square Garden full of eggs and Matthew Broderick.
So we have a big, huge place full of eggs, both of these movies, but one is distinctly better than the other.
Because one is a single egg buried in the heart of the city and amongst destroyed buildings. The other one is like 550 eggs in Madison Square Garden, and the government not just immediately blowing it up.
Nope, we gotta say that. The Knicks gotta play. We clear these dinosaurs up. The Knicks gotta play. Man, it was just stupid. It's a dumb movie.
Roland Emmerich making a toy commercial.
It had all the trappings of a toy commercial.
It did, very much so. I remember Taco Bell marketing the hell out of that.
I do. Right on down to the horrible, horrible movie. Yep. So, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, look, we've gotten, as you said, bad Godzilla movies before, but my hope for Godzilla 2 was lying in two things. One, the concept of Destroy All Monsters is really awesome. The concept of Destroy All Monsters is essentially a battle royale of Godzilla versus Mothra and Rodan, and I think there's one other.
Yeah, there's one
other. There's one other in there. But, like, in the Japanese Toho versions, like, at one point it is literally 3-on-1. And the beauty of that in this concept is the fact that the way that they've constructed everything, these monsters are all supposed to be super hyped up power-wise. They're all supposed to be forces of nature. So, like, they didn't use classic Godzilla movies because they didn't have the licenses for Gareth Edwards' movies. So they had to basically create an amalgamation of something to, you know. But this isn't like an amalgamation. These three characters are not going to be an amalgamation. They are characters that have a distinct look, a distinct vibe, a distinct skill set, a distinct history. You remember how when the first Avengers movie was coming out, we were trying to figure out if it was the Kree army that Loki was using, because the Kree obviously have a deep rooted history in Marvel, and they looked similar, and some of their weaponry looked similar, and that would have kind of put a different twist on how we viewed the movie, because we have preconceived notions of what the Kree are and how the Kree act and should look. Same way with Klingons in Star Trek.
Yeah.
You have the, you know, when you hear the name Klingon, you have a distinct vision of what that should be. Some would argue you have a distinct vision of what Khan should be, but that's another thing. But, like, Destroy All Monsters as a concept is very inherently cinematic. These characters are fundamental to the Godzilla lure. And, again, with the way you've set it up with the force of nature, it's going to be a really awesome movie, I think. Gareth not being there concerns me, because you had a tone and a tenor and a seriousness and a slow burn mentality with that movie that works and builds that world. Alan Taylor Johnson and Mary Elizabeth Olsen, you can just throw out the window. It doesn't matter. The thing that was there, you know, there to see was Godzilla. And my concern is, with Gareth gone, if you're changing tones to more of a horror comedic tone, you know, how's that going to work with Destroy All Monsters?
Well, just off that premise of Destroy All Monsters, it's, we're going to come here to see this battle royal between all these monsters. And the thing that frustrates people about the first Godzilla is, I don't get to see no battles. I get to see a start of a battle and some doors closing on me, or the TV turning, or
you know, the train going by.
Going right by them in the dark, and I can't see anything. But they have this big battle at the end. That's in the dark that I can see everything for. So,
in his defense, I've always said that's the way the Toho movies are. The Toho movies build toward the final fight. And with his version of Godzilla, you wanted to try and preserve the shock and awe moment of seeing the largest Godzilla ever put on screen for the first time in all of his glory. It's why you start off with shots of footprints. It's why you start off with shots on TV that are quick. You build toward that reveal.
Oh no, I get that. And really, it's kind of in the tough spot, because yes, you want to save the big battle for the end. And you can't go the whole movie without
actually seeing it. Yeah, you don't want to Cloverfield the thing.
Yeah. But the way they did it was just like, can I get like one more swing, one more tail swing or something before you cut it off? Because it was like, you get the shot and you see them going in, and then you cut it off. Like, and at least let me see somebody get hit, something.
And they really didn't do. My one issue with that movie is the fact they didn't really lay out the design of the amalgamation creatures well. They look basically like spiders, essentially, once you get a chance to see them in their full glory. They didn't do a really good job of showing them and explaining, you know.
What they were, no. Yeah.
But again, that's the issue that you had to have when you had to create something.
Especially keep in mind that you're, like, crossing your fingers that you can get your hands on the rest of these later, which they, in effect, did.
Well, because they proved they weren't Roland Emmerich.
Yeah. And that, I give them all the credit in the world.
Toho was the same way Nintendo was. Like, Nintendo was so burned by the 92 Super Mario movie, they never released their characters out again.
And they had every right to, because that movie was god-awful.
And so was Emmerich's version.
Which one's worse? It's like,
at least Godzilla looks sort of like Godzilla.
I mean, if Godzilla was a T-Rex, yeah, I guess. But yeah, the Mario Brothers movies are just like, there's nothing. I mean, Yoshi's cute, but that's about it.
Princess Peach.
Was she Peach? I thought she was Daisy.
That's right, that's Daisy.
Yeah, Mario didn't even have his princess. It was Luigi's princess that nobody thinks about.
Yeah.
Now I'm going to have to watch that movie.
But, I mean, the other news that came out this week about Godzilla is the fact that they are thinking of putting into action a writer's room. And we know how wonderful that worked out for Transformers. And that's what everybody's been saying. But here's my deal about Godzilla in the writer's room. People are freaking out. Like, it's kind of like what people did with the Harry Potter announcement that Fantastic Beasts is going to be 5 movies. People were like, okay, we were already skeptical that you were doing 3. Now you're telling us you're going to do 5. We haven't even seen the first one yet. The thing about the writer's room here is I think that they are in a tough spot because they lost Gareth. And they were planning on having Gareth, which is what I was hoping would happen, is Gareth would produce and consult on Skull Island, he would direct Godzilla 2, and then he would produce and consult on Kong vs. Godzilla. Now I'm hopeful that Gareth will produce and consult on Kong Skull Island and Godzilla 2, and then direct Kong versus Godzilla. But you don't have a creative driving force. Bernstein, as I said, he wrote the final draft of the Godzilla movie that came out. He wrote the first draft of Kong Skull Island, and I believe is still the sole credited screenwriter on Kong Skull Island. And he wrote an initial draft, I believe, for Godzilla 2, or what the idea of Destroy All Monsters would be. But he's not going to be the final screenwriter, obviously, on Godzilla 2. And he's not going to, and Edwards isn't going to direct. So if you don't have that kind of cohesive creative vision, say what you will, the DC films all look and feel similar because that's Zack's interpretation and influence throughout. The Marvel movies have the same look and feel because it's Kevin Feige and his team coming up with the story of the movie, giving it to a director, saying, here, pitch it back to us in a more creative fashion, and this is what you get, you know? When there is no singular creative vision behind a franchise, you can lose your way. And so I think what the writer's room is doing is not necessarily to come up with 15 other movies that are going to pop up in this universe. I think they're focusing on trying to figure out how the heck they're going to do Kong versus Godzilla. What is the driving force? This is where we find Kong at the end of Kong Skull Island. This is where we find Godzilla at the end of Godzilla 2 after having destroyed or taken out the three of his biggest foes. This is where the Earth is at this particular moment in time after having gone through all of these traumatic events. So what's the antagonist for Kong versus Godzilla, and what is their purpose for fighting, and how do we bring that about? And I think that's what a writer's room would be for, is to try and figure out the script or the story idea for Kong versus Godzilla.
So the writer's room is specifically for that one and not just for...
I think that they've said the idea of putting a writer's room is out there. They haven't greenlit it. And no one knows. People are assuming that it's to start a larger universe. But from everything that Legendary has been saying is they only have a plan for 3 movies. They don't have a plan for 5 or 6 or 8. They're only looking to get to Kong versus Godzilla, which is something that no one's on a major level been able to do before.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think you can try to franchise that. Like, they fight and then you can have them go their separate ways, but I think that's kind of it.
Yeah, it's not an Avengers-esque situation.
Yeah, they can't fight, come back together, and fight everybody else again. No, we want to see them fight. They go away.
With an amped-up version of Kong. The biggest Kong we will ever see on screen.
Yeah.
Which is out of necessity because you have the largest Godzilla ever on screen.
Yeah, because they made Godzilla dang, for lack of a better word, monster. It's ridiculous how big he is. So, but yeah, I don't think they're making a franchise. So, getting Kong versus Godzilla together, it sounds like a good idea.
It's 2020. It's 4 years away. The recurrent release date for Godzilla 2 is 2019.
And see, that makes sense, because then you're going to be focusing on Godzilla 2.
You need 17, 19, and 20.
Yeah. I hear a writer's room. I know everybody thinks that because of Transformers, but writer's rooms have been around before that.
People don't like writer's rooms because they're reminiscent of television. But the Marvel model is pretty much television. The TV model is, we break the stories as a group and we assign them to a different director, you know, over the course of 18, 12, 22 episodes.
Yeah.
And it's the same way with Marvel. We'll come up with the stories, we'll give them to you as a director, you pitch them back to us in a more creative package, and we accept or reject you based on how that package looks and feels and how close it is to what we want. That's why Ava was never going to work for Marvel, because that's not the way Ava does things.
Yeah. The whole stigma of movies being like TV, it's pretty much, it should be outdated, because it's not like we're getting bad TV now. There's so much good TV that's coming from these writers.
True, but like, Birth, Movies, Death had a really nice piece on the fact that when you get to a point where your everything is serialized storytelling, you lose the episode of the week impact. You know, each individual episode starts losing importance because you're just trying to get toward to the ultimate goal that you know you're getting to. A perfect example in the TV realm, I'll say, is 24. There are 24 episodes in a season. Each episode is 1 hour in the day. Those middle hours tend to drag on, and they just basically become filler. They don't really advance the plot any further. They just are there because you need them because of the way the concept is set up. You know, it's the way Ant-Man. Ant-Man's a nice film. It's a really good film. But to a lot of people, it feels like a perfunctory necessity to get Hank Pym into the universe so that you can have him in Civil War.
I can see that to a point. With the movies, I think you don't, like with shows specifically, like network shows, you have 24 episodes, and you're
22, 24.
Yeah, so yeah, there's going to be episodes where it's just like, I got nothing for you to do, so it's just going to be kind of lingering. The movies, you get a movie, if it's like Marvel, it's one every year. You can skip the fluff on a lot of stuff. So all to say, I don't think hearing a writer's room is a bad thing, specifically with this one, because I don't think it's
because again,
stretch it out.
Because again, Godzilla, Kong Skull Island is in the can.
Oh yeah,
so
that's right, yeah.
It's March 17th, so you know how that movie ends, and you know where Kong is at the end of it. You're now in the process of, I assume that these guys are taking Bernstein's script and working off of it and adding to it. So you'll have a firm idea of where Godzilla's going to be at the end of Godzilla 2. So that would mean you can put a bunch of people in a room and say, okay, here are where our two characters are. Here are the events that have happened so far in three movies over the course of 30 years, because that one set in the 70s. How do we get to, what is the reason for them fighting? How do we get these characters into conflict? And if you put 12 creative people in a room, or 5 creative people in a room, you should be able to come up with a reasonable story idea. I mean, yeah. Lord knows Cameron is, like, sequestered people in Australia, New Zealand for, you know, 4 years trying to crack stories for Avatar.
They've got to hate him. They've got to.
Not if they're getting paid, sir. Not if they're getting paid.
I know, but you moved me to Australia for 4 years to work on this. You still haven't shot anything yet. It's going to be another 4 years.
We entered this room and you told us we had to write one movie. But now you're telling us we have to write four.
We can't leave until it's done. And when I say it's done, I mean till the last one's in the can. So
we'll never see our wives and children again.
My kid was just born. I'm going to go back and going off to college. Thanks, James Cameron.
Oh, boy. But that's, I mean, the Godzilla news, it's good to know that they're at least getting, Legendary is getting things on track for Godzilla 2. Even if it is 2019.
I mean, that just means they have time to, like, get it right.
Yeah, for sure. So, let's move on. The DC Cinematic Universe, James Wan, had some comments about Aquaman, which is his 2018 DC movie, and starring Jason Momoa. And your thoughts, sir, on a classic sort of swashbuckling action-adventure, sort of high seas adventure story.
Okay, yeah, when you say that high seas part, yes, it does immediately make me think of pirates.
No, swashbuckling is the word that makes me think of pirates.
See, when I hear swashbuckling, I go to Zorro and, like, Robin Hood, because those are the
old. Not the Ridley Scott Robin Hood, though.
No, I've never seen that, and I never will. No, I think of like Daffy Duck, which makes me think of Errol Flynn. So that's the Robin Hood I go to. Which are not words that I would think of for Aquaman. Because I think when I think of swashbuckling, I think of swords and like pirates and sword fights and stuff. And while he has a trident, I just see this Aquaman more as a, I'm going to throw this trident through your leg and I'm going to pound you in the face kind of thing. Swashbuckling, not so much. So I'm going to take the spirit of what he's saying and saying that it's going to be in the vein of those, like, high fun kind of adventure movies. I hope that's what he's saying. I mean, he does reference Raiders of the Lost Ark and Romancing the Stone, and those are big, fun adventure movies. But then I know he's trying to do, like, incorporate, he's said he wants to incorporate, like, his stuff, like, for horror to the sea stuff. So I don't know how all that fits.
It just sounds like a very big amalgamation, does it not?
It sounds like, yeah, a whole bunch of stuff just going together. So, I mean, I trust him. I just don't know what this is going to look like.
I mean, he's earned the benefit of the doubt with the two Conjuring movies and with Fast 7. And, you know, as far as I'm concerned, dude, like, the writers of Fast 7, like, should, like, have jobs for life. Because any time that you get the phone call on Thanksgiving saying, oh, by the way, I know we're like 2 weeks from finishing filming, but our star just died in a fiery car crash. So y'all are all coming back in for Christmas break. You're sitting in a room eating Chinese food until you figure out how to take care of this problem.
Yeah, like, everybody on Fast 7 should just, like, Universal should just cut them a check, like, every year. Like, we didn't forget. I mean, it made enough money. They can do that.
Well, the only reason that movie even works, that movie had to be completely reworked. And of course, the way it ended up getting reworked because of who was in charge, it became the Vin Diesel show.
Of course.
Which is how that franchise is going to have to fast to go forward. And I think that's part of the reason why Dwayne Johnson and Vin Diesel were not having good camaraderie on the set of Fast 8, because I do think that Hobbs is just as popular a character as Toretto, and I think that there's some tension there.
I mean, The Rock got the nickname Franchise Viagra primarily because he went to the Fast franchise that nobody cared about, and as soon as he did, it became...
4 had made more money than 2, 1 and 2, but it started as a potential billion-dollar franchise with 5.
Yes. So he's got a legitimate gripe to say, look, man, you had all these moves before me, and people were like, I'll give 4 is okay. Now it's like, I'm lining up to go see Fast and the Furious. They would never say that before he was in the 5th one. And they still wouldn't be saying it now if they would have picked Tommy Lee Jones like they said they wanted to. So, The Rock has some claim to this. Also, I'm kind of biased. I like The Rock better than Vin Diesel, but...
We'll see. But, I mean, like, Juan, The only issue I have with this movie is I haven't seen this Aquaman yet. So I don't have, you know, I can't say for sure whether or not I'm on board with this iteration of Aquaman or what this Aquaman is going to look, you know, and what Atlantis is going to look like and how much of a role Atlantis is going to play. We've heard rumors and speculation that the Atlantean-Amazonian wars were going to play a part in Justice League, which is where Aquaman's going to debut. I almost have to wait and see Justice League before I make a determination of how excited or not excited I am for for Aquaman.
I think when it comes to Aquaman, everything is based off the fact that Aquaman has been the butt of jokes for years.
Entourage did a whole series off of it.
Yeah, and watch Robot Chicken. The first person to make fun of is Aquaman. Like, Superman makes him cry and go run into the corner. Yeah.
The Super Friends.
Yeah.
That's where all that comes from.
Yeah, so when you say Jason Momoa's Aquaman, everybody just stops. He's like, wait. Drago? That big, scary-looking dude is going to be Aquaman? And then...
You see the first pictures.
And not so much what he did in Batman vs. Superman, but the Justice League trailer, you see him, and that's kind of the first time you actually see him interact with somebody. You're like,
oh, he just picked Bruce Wayne up off the ground.
Yeah, and he's like, he can throw him through the wall if he wants to. And that's all we've gotten so far, but that's enough. It's just enough of a departure of what we know from Aquaman, so people are like, okay, I'm excited to see the movie. But yeah, we don't know anything about Aquaman to really make a judgment call on this one way or another. I do think Juan has had input on how Aquaman will be portrayed in Justice League, so that might give us our few breadcrumbs, but we're going to have to wait to see the movie to really get an idea.
Well, we know Mara looks the way that she should look, so, I mean, the pieces are there. Again, it's kind of like Justice League. The pieces are there, and what we're seeing kind of looks encouraging, but again, we've been down this road before, and we've fallen into this hole before, and, you know, fool us once, fool us twice.
Yeah, you're working on three times now, buddy.
Yeah, so, I mean, I understand, the quotes themselves don't concern me, it's just all the chatter, I can't make a determination of my excitement level for the movie or how good the movie's going to be until I see this version of Aquaman.
Yeah.
So let's move on to some Marvel Fox talk. So there's a character named Wolverine who's got his one last stand and now a biological family in a post-apocalyptic society in what looks like Red Dead 2.
Oh, man. Yeah, so we saw the Logan trailer.
And a bunch of, like, lead up to it.
Yeah, there were a bunch of posts. After the first post, I just kind of stopped looking at it until the trailer came out. So, I'm judging it as a trailer. I'm fine with it. I'm actually mildly excited. I would probably be more excited if this was just, like, the first thing I ever saw for Wolverine. I'd be like, oh, okay, I'm really excited for this. The trailer looks good. I like the whole tone that he's old and beaten and broken down, and they play the Johnny Cash song on it. Just all kind of fits. Now, there's a bunch of other things that make me like, I don't want to pay money for this because y'all gonna do this to me again. I don't like time travel, and I don't like messed up timelines, and that's already like strike number one against X-Men because they're just like, we're gonna live in these jacked up timelines and you're gonna deal with it. Strike number one against you. So we know this is Hugh Jackman's last movie. And from what higher-ups have said, they don't really want to replace Hugh Jackman as Wolverine. So it seems like they're going to give us a Wolverine substitute in X-23. Which is fine. That's smart. You get the same kind of vibe of the character, but it's different. And it's a girl. That should all work together. Except we're back to the stupid timeline thing, and you're basing this movie off of a timeline 10 years down the line from Apocalypse. So this girl is way over here. Your next successful franchise is Deadpool is way back here. the people that she really should meet up with are the X-Men, which are way back here. So, how are we crossing these streams, people?
Don't cross the streams, Jay.
I did on purpose. That's the main thing, but then I have other issues like nitpicky things, like Professor X has hair, and it just drives me nuts.
I have bigger issues with the fact that, like, Kelly Hugh pretty much already played X-23 in X-2, so...
But she... Nobody's going to see it that way but you, because they're going to be like, that's Lady Deathstrike, she blah, blah, blah. And this, in theory, because of the way the character is, this little girl is actually Wolverine turned into a girl.
Right. Taken from, literally ripped from Wolverine.
If you want to use those kind of Trumpian terms, yeah. So, yeah, it's...
I mean, he says that it's set in 2024, based, you know, this is set, you know, some years after the epilogue of Days of Future Past, where everybody's happy and sunshining and smiling. And if you go back and you look at that epilogue, Logan does have some gray hair to him. So, like, he is further down the line.
But, okay. But he was... It looks like he was born in, like, probably, like, Victorian era. Somewhere. I don't know if he's that old. But he's quite old. He's way older than Charles. And by the time we meet him in 99, because we're still sticking with that timeline, he looks like he's 29. So you're telling me he lived for, all, like, at least 100 years to make him look like he's 29. And then...
In 20.
Yeah, like 23. He looks like he's supposed to look like he's 60 and falling apart. I'm supposed to just buy that. I buy that his healing factor makes him age slowly. I buy that his healing factor can conk out when he gets a little bit older. I don't buy that he falls off the cliff in 20 years.
But, Chad, people thought Tom Brady was going to fall off a cliff at 39. Because don't all quarterbacks go off a cliff at 39?
Physically, they should. Tom Brady is... I don't. He fell off the cliff at the end of the year last year. We'll see what happens this year. I don't want to talk about Tom Brady. I don't like Tom Brady.
So but let's...
Your point is taken.
So let's talk about Deadpool 2. Still have no idea when it's coming. I assume 2018. Because that's 2 years, and they want to pump this thing out as fast as they can.
I forget the dates they already have signed up, but I think 18 is... I would think they want to get it out in, well, no, they can't do it in 17. So, yeah, 18 would be the shot.
That's 2 years.
Yeah.
And we got some casting for Dynamo. So, your thoughts on these lovely young ladies who are all there to play this part, which is basically a female one-up of Deadpool.
Yeah. So, there's, six names. I know four of the names, but I've only seen... three of them in things, which would be Mary Elizabeth Winstead.
From 13 Cloverfield Lane.
Yeah. Sienna Miller, which I saw her in G.I. Joe. That's the only thing I remember her from. And Sophia Boutella, who was in Kingsman and Star Trek. I saw her in Kingsman, I didn't see her in Star Trek. And I think Mary Elizabeth Winstead, she was in all the girlfriends, all the boyfriends.
Sex in the City?
No, Scott Pilgrim.
Scott Pilgrim versus the World. Yeah,
she was Ramona and Scott Pilgrim.
Yeah, boy, did I get that wrong. I mean, yeah. Sex in the City and Scott Pilgrim just not have a. They don't share anything in common.
But I don't know. I don't know what Lizzie Kaplan has been in. I'd heard of her name. You got anything on her? And then there's Stephanie Sigmund and Sylvia. I'm gonna say Hoax. But I don't know those other girls. So to me, it comes down to the first four, Lizzie, Mary Elizabeth, Sienna, and Sophia. And I would think it would be Mary Elizabeth that would come down with the part.
I think Sophia is just too busy for what they're going to want her to do. And I think Mary Elizabeth Winstead has the comedic pacing to go with Ryan Reynolds, which... is going to be necessary.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think that... I mean, the main thing is people were getting a Deadpool 2.
Yeah.
And this was a character that had to fight tooth and nail claw to get one movie ever.
Yeah, and then when they got it, they're like, oh, we're still going to start cutting some of your budget, which is why his duffel bag isn't in the last fight.
Which they keep making fun of.
Yeah, they make fun of the whole time. When he realizes it's not there, I watched it again, and the scene that he calls the guy that has it in there, and then the taxi gets in a wreck, and the guy in the back is just yelling. Look, it's hilarious. I know Deadpool's not for everybody, but for people that appreciate it, it is funny. So, that we're getting this, and we're getting Domino.
We're getting Cable.
See, that's the news that everybody's waiting on. I'm happy to hear the Domino news, and it's nice to speculate on that, but I want to see who they're picking for Cable.
Kyle Chandler. Mr. Friday Night Lights.
Who was the
Mr. Sunday Morning Newspaper.
When that rumor hit, there was also a girl attached that was going to be Domino, and I don't think it was any one of these. So, I say that to say...
Well, I mean, the other guy is, like, going to be busy in New Zealand filming Avatars 2, 3, 4, and 5.
Okay, see, the thing with him, and I can't remember his name, but he's the guy from Avatar that looks like Cable in Avatar.
And Don't Breathe. Who has been on record as saying he would play the part if offered.
And I think he'd be good. I think he's just... I don't know how far they want to take Deadpool and Cable, but I just think he's a little bit too old for it. Because he's like 60-something.
Unless they want to do a one-off. Cable as a one-off.
I don't... If Deadpool 2 hits, I don't think you can do Cable as a one-off. Which is going to tie... Which should tie into other X-Men movies, being that Cable is Cyclops' son. Spoiler alert if y'all don't know that, but you have Google.
Like, they will ever reference that ever. They will make jokes about it in Deadpool 2. They will never actually mention it anywhere else.
Well, I'm hopeful that after Apocalypse, they're just like, Bryan Singer, you can have this executive credit. Now stay in the corner. Don't ever come out and tell us anything. And then they might be able to do some things like that. But if, yeah, they're never going to reference it, then...
They've already said that, like, the next X-Men movie is X-Men in Space.
I really don't think that'll happen. I really just think after Apocalypse and the reception of Deadpool, like, Logan was already in the works. It's Hugh Jackman's last movie. You let that happen.
That's the only reason it's happening.
Yeah.
Because the other two did not make enough money to warrant a trilogy.
And they were god-awful. Right. So, you...
Silver Samurai anymore.
You let Logan happen, but then you... Everything that happens from Deadpool on, you just go brand new. You can keep the cast from Apocalypse. You can keep the X-23 girl. I don't know how you're getting her to present day, but... Yeah. Wait. Deadpool is in present day.
Mm-hmm.
And this movie is technically, like, 8 years away. But it looks like a dystopian future while Deadpool is this. But again, they let them live in whatever timelines they want. So, all the more reason, once Logan goes away, go bye-bye, see ya. After Deadpool, I wouldn't have another X-Men movie. They keep talking about New Mutants. Do that. And then maybe come back to X-Men.
I don't, but the X-Men brand still carried them to like $600 million, so.
Yeah, but Deadpool that didn't have a brand outside of people...
The people liking really, the marketing machine.
Yeah. He didn't have a brand, and he's your highest grossing X-Men movie. Ride him. Make him... I don't want to say make him like a new Wolverine, but kind of do that. And do New Mutants and have him pop up. And there you go. You've carried the mutant name, and then you can cleanse X-Men and then restart it. And... Now, look, there you go. You've got Deadpool over here. You've got New Mutants over here. You could potentially have X-Force and then X-Men. There you go, Fox. There's your Marvel table right there. All you've got to do is let Logan go and then stop being stupid.
We will see. So let's move on to our Marvel news of the week. Slow news week over at the House of Mouse, huh? So, early reactions to Doctor Strange... they got the trippy visuals right. It's kind of out there, but structurally, it's a standard paint-by-numbers Marvel movie that at least feels self-contained and doesn't feel like it's, you know, pushing for 18 other movies down the line.
And I think that's the bare minimum you can ask for from a Marvel movie. Because if you give that bare minimum, people are going to like it. I'm hearing all of the reaction I've heard has been positive. Mostly very positive. The worst has been stuff like that. Like, it's like, it's just your typical Marvel movie, but it is contained. But
the cast is really feels good. The word that I've heard is that it feels the most self-contained since the first Iron Man.
Yes.
And the Iron Man comparisons are going to happen anyway, because you're talking about a snarky, egotistical neurosurgeon who falls from grace.
Yeah.
And has to return home as the conquering hero.
And there's nothing wrong with doing that if it's, you know, it serves a story. It gives your audience what they want, and it'll be good. And I've heard the visuals. This is the second movie I've ever heard that you should see it in 3D, which is going to bump up the sales. And
hey, we tried to do that for Ghostbusters. Paul Feig didn't give us a check for it, but
okay. we did endorse the 3D for Ghostbusters because, I mean, it's the best 3D we've had in a while. But this is supposed to be like next level stuff. So it's all encouraging. I mean, I thought I liked the movie. Doctor Strange is not my favorite, so I'm
not a magic guy.
Yeah, not a magic guy at all. So I wanted to see it, but it wasn't like on pins and needles ready to go see it now. I'm getting there. I guess for my better judgment, I watched a clip from it today, and it's of a fight scene between Doctor Strange and whatever Mads Mikkelsen's character name is.
Cornelius.
And, something like that. And there's magic used in there, and it's weird, but it works. And I can tell looking at it just on my computer screen that when you do this on the big screen and with 3D, it's going to be like a different kind of experience.
Yeah, well, I mean, Feige's got a lot invested here because this is his favorite of all the Marvel characters. And the Ditko illustrations were so vital to that character taking off in the 60s. You had to honor that legacy in the film, and they've done that tremendously. Apparently, the similarities to Inception are no longer an issue.
Oh, good.
Apparently, they, like, go, like, apparent from everything I've heard, what they did in Ant-Man is a third of what they're going to do for Doctor Strange. Like, it's going to get, like, trippy and bright and colorful and weird.
That all of that is good. It's particularly good for you, so you can stop hearing that Inception thing.
Yes. But, I mean, these solo movies, if you want to call them that, these standalone movies, which, if you look at Marvel's box office, their origin movies are always toward the lower end of their grosses. It's got to do its job. It's got to put Strange, develop Strange. It's got to make people like him as a character. It's got to display his skill set, define his skill set, what he brings to the table, and introduce him to the larger Marvel Cinematic Universe, which in this case, they do outside of the body of the movie. They actually do it in the post-credit sequence. Instead of in the body of the movie, which is good.
I mean, that's not the first Iron Man. Again, like the first
Iron Man. I like that first Iron Man. Like, that's the job that this movie has to do. It'll be the job the Captain Marvel movie has to do. It's just, you establish their skill sets, you get the audience on board with who they are, and establish their power set, what they bring to the table, and then, you know, he will return in Avengers Infinity War Part 1.
That's what Pfizer said that.
Yeah.
That's part of what happened this week. He said that he confirmed that Doctor Strange will be in that. I think Captain Marvel is going to cheat and introduce her in
Infinity War. Well, I don't necessarily know it's cheating because they did the same with Chadwick. I mean, Black Panther. Panther isn't going to be an origin story because he's already been introduced in Civil War. And you already know his skill set and you already know his background, so you don't have, you know, It's kind of like a sequel.
Well, I think what they're going to do with her is they're going to introduce Carol Danvers in Infinity War.
Might I actually end up being the young schoolgirl from Iowa they talked about in Winter Soldier. Because that was the one, remember when he's got the guy on his knees and he's running through the list of people that Hydra's targeting because they know that there's a potential. He names off a valedictorian from Iowa. And no one could figure out who he was talking about. So I always thought that it was
I just thought it was a throwaway line.
Yeah, I didn't think it was a throwaway line because everybody else he mentions in that list, Stephen Strange, Bruce Banner, they're all prominent names.
He said four. He said the girl, he said Stephen Strange, Bruce Banner, and he said like one other random dude. And like I just kept thinking about, I went to the dude first, I'm like, there's nothing that I can think of that fits this, so whatever. So I was just like, okay, he said four things. They gave us two in the middle because we know and they get us excited. And they gave us two throwaways just to be like, you know, well, whatever.
We can add that to the growing list of things we have to ask Kevin Feige about during question time with Mr. Feige. But, you know, it's going to do its job. It's going to make decent money, not great money. It's going to establish a character and it's going to get us further down the road till to Avengers Infinity War.
I do wonder if the visuals are this good, as everybody's saying, and word of mouth is good, will it cause it to do a little bit better? Because people will be like, no, you need to go see this.
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, we're talking about a two-week window until Fantastic Beasts. So you've got 2 weeks to make as much money as possible. And then Fantastic Beasts has about 3 weeks to run until Rogue One. So, you know, it's a crowded holiday season. So you've got to make the money. My baseline for this will be Thor: The Dark World, even though it's a sequel, because it was released in November. Mm-hmm. Similar timetable, similar competition. It had Hunger Games coming immediately afterwards.
That's right, yeah.
You know, so that's kind of the baseline numbers-wise that I'll be looking at for Doctor Strange, which is tracking right now anywhere between $50 and $75 million for an opening weekend.
I'll take 70 right now. 2 weeks out, I'll take 70. I think that's a good number for that.
Alrighty. Speaking of Avengers Infinity War, so Tom Rothman over at Sony wants to rework that deal, huh? You're not a big fan of superheroes, that dude.
That's the dude that, he's the one that
told Bryan Singer he couldn't have colorful costumes all the way back in 2000.
This dude. I understand he wasn't the head of the studio when this deal was made, but he was.
That was Amy Pascal.
But he was the head of the studio when he started seeing these receipts from Captain America Civil War. And even though the agreement is Marvel gets to keep all their money, if he's worth anything in business, he would look at that and like, oh, just a sixth grader can just open up Twitter and be like hashtag Civil War, hashtag Spider-Man, and just read the rundown of I love Spider-Man in this movie, Spider-Man here, blah blah blah, love Spider-Man. They're not gonna hear anything bad. So why are you gonna kick the golden goose? Just let it sit there. Lay the eggs.
Take off, Marvel. We got this. Thank you for setting it up for us. We'll run this thing now. Have a nice day.
And so your choices are, you have your golden goose sitting here. It's going to lay its eggs. You know when it's going to lay its eggs. All you got to do is sit there and wait for it. Or you can proceed to kick it and be like, lay my eggs now. I want you to do it my way, right now. And the goat.
The Veronica Salt way of doing things.
Yes. And then y'all both just go down the tubes. Because this is what he's going to do. Because at this point, Sony has no goodwill with Spider-Man. Marvel has all the goodwill with Spider-Man. As soon as people figure out, Marvel's not doing Spider-Man anymore. Like, say, bruh, y'all made like five before. We like two and a half of them. But we like that one. Can they have him back? Just let him do the stuff. That's all you do. Just collect the check. Sign the paper. Collect the check.
I think part of this, I don't necessarily know that this is going to be Rothman trying to renegotiate. I think, I mean, we said this back when the deal got done, that we didn't know how long the deal was for. So it's entirely possible that they set this, you know, it's like a, you know, a player or a coach that you bring in and you put them on a 1-year contract with a player with a club option for a second year. You make them play that year out under contract and prove themselves. Well, maybe the deal that they signed in 15 was strictly just for Civil War and Homecoming. And now he's not contractually, well, he's contractually obligated because he probably had a 5-film clause. But the Marvel-Sony deal and the rights deal, which was so complex and so nuanced, may only cover those two movies and now has to be renegotiated. And the issue that you have here is that Homecoming is not coming out to July. They are already going to be almost finished filming Infinity War by that point.
Yeah.
So, like, unless you're going to have Spider-Man come back in and do reshoots, which I don't think they're going to want to do on a movie that huge and that filled with characters where you've got to know who's in your movie and where everybody is. The Russos talk all the time about how they were so focused on making sure each character felt like they had a character arc in Civil War. You can't take him off the table and then shove him back in. No. So, I mean, I think this is A, I think that this is Holland being very open and very honest about what he knows. And two, I think this is Sony possibly trying to renegotiate for a better split.
I hope it's that. Like, if they want a better split, I don't begrudge them for wanting a better split. Because, I mean, we don't know what the split is now.
And again, we didn't know how long the deal was for. Yeah. Like I said, I believe the deal was probably for 2 movies, and we'll see from there.
And that's not a bad thing, because you're going into uncharted territory. You want to see what's going to happen. I can understand that. But, granted, I know your part of the your solo Spider-Man movie hasn't come out yet, but the minute you see the reaction of Civil War, it's like
their Spider-Man, Tom Holland's Spider-Man, is testing through the roof.
Yeah,
The reaction at the Comic-Con to all of the Homecoming footage was nothing but positive praise.
Yeah, so you go ahead, and I know it's legal and it takes a long time, but as soon as you see that, you're like, "This is what we need to do," and you find a way they extend it. You try to work on getting a better split. I know at one point Sony wasn't getting anything of, like, Spider-Man merchandise money at all. Work on, you keep the movie splits, but we get so much of this merchandise money, because even without the movie, Spider-Man is still the highest-selling merchandising superhero. So, with the movies, that's going to bump it up. Take some of that cut and roll with that. I think that's what they should do, and I hope that's what they're trying to do.
Yeah, I mean, and I think that they're not, I think, with as much trouble as they've been in since in the post-Amy Pascal, post-North Korea hack world that they live in, I think that Sony Japan isn't in a mood to let Sony Burbank loose again. And
this is true.
And throw away, like you said, a completely viable revenue stream.
I think so. Well, on that end, I think Sony Japan, if there's nothing done by the time Homecoming comes out, and Homecoming comes out and does what we think it's going to do,
$1 billion.
Yeah. Sony Japan is going to be like, "I don't know what y'all doing. Do it now. Do I have to come over there and do it? Because I will." Because it's going to be a complete no-brainer. But I think for them to step in, they're going to really have to see, look how much money this is. Oh, this is like a sure thing. And we don't have to do anything. Why did you sign a check yesterday?
So, Chad, there's a small movie called Guardians of the Galaxy that was a surprise hit in August of 2014 and took the world by surprise. And it's getting a sequel in May of 2017. And that sequel has an adorable little baby Groot in it. Your thoughts, sir, on the trailer, which will be attached to Doctor Strange, for Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2.
So I'm gonna tell the story of my daughter and her mother seeing the teaser trailer, because I came home and when they came in, I'm like, okay, I'm just gonna throw YouTube on. I'm not even gonna tell them what it is. I'm just gonna throw it on. So I just throw it on and they're looking, and then they hear the song, and this is the Marvel movie they've seen the most of, and they're like, oh, it's Guardians, and they're sitting there, and like, okay, it's Guardians, they're getting back in the feel of it, and I sit around the hall from them, and I wait, and I just lean up against the wall, and I wait till the thing comes up, and then I see Rocket shoot the wall, and I'm like, here it comes, and as soon as Groot peeked out, in unison, unprompted by me at all, they're both like, oh, and this prolonged, deep, like, really into it all, and I'm like, that right there is, it wins the entire thing, because it got me, it got them, anybody that's seen this is like, I want one of them, like, right now. So, the trailer didn't give us much, but in the little bit that it did give us, particularly with Baby Groot, this movie is going to make all the money, and Baby Groot is going to rule the world, because everybody wants a Baby Groot.
Which will just help Vin Diesel's ego even more.
I need to hear Baby Groot to see if they're like Vin Diesel voice on Baby Groot, which is going to make him even more of an insufferable bastard. Because if he's doing like little Baby Groot voices, and they sound the way I imagine they sound, and everybody's still going to be like, oh, they got to put him on the toys, and he's going to be like, yeah, yeah, I'm Baby Groot. And he's already like, whatever the dude is at Fast and the Furious, and skiing down jungle mountain terrain on freaking skis, dude from XXX. So yeah, he's going to be a doubly insufferable bastard, so yeah.
I mean, so the first thing that I noticed about the trailer, and I tweeted at you, was that, like, the lettering's purple. And, of course, your first thought was that I was speaking of Thanos.
Yeah.
I was talking about Ego, who is seen in the movie. The surface of Ego.
That's what I figured. Yeah, they're playing, they got off my head.
Is seen in the movie. But, Ego himself is not seen in his human form.
I didn't expect to see him in this.
But the lettering is purple, and Ego is purple. The red lettering for the original was yellow, yeah. So it's a definite change.
Yeah, when I saw it, I'm like, oh, it stands out because I'm used to the yellow, and I see the purple. I was like, okay, I didn't know why they did it. You said purple, and I'm like, oh, Thanos, that's the James Gunn wouldn't just completely lie to us. And then when you said Ego, I'm like, yep, that's it. That makes all the sense in the world. Nobody's ever going to pick up on this, but that's why you did it. Bravo, you marketing people, you.
Yes. Well, I picked up on it because we've been the championing podcast of Ego, the Planet.
Like, you were literally like pounding on tables for Ego. So yeah, yeah.
And I'm still begging for Alter Ego. His brother, Alter Ego.
The more I...
Peter Quill's uncle.
So, I think that has a chance of happening simply because Kurt Russell is Ego, and I don't think they're off Ego, but...
And I want Steve Buscemi as Alter Ego.
Hey, that works. Because I'm still clamoring for at the end of whatever the fourth Avengers movie is, yeah. We see Galactus, and he takes out one of these planets.
Well, Miles Teller is still saying that they're talking to him about a Fantastic Four 2. And Kimberg says that they've got ideas.
Kimberg's a liar. Kimberg, no, he's not lying. He has ideas. They are never going to see the light of day, but he's got ideas.
None of them good.
I'm off his track record, unless it's like Star Wars with other people around him. No, not so much.
So we talked earlier about Captain Marvel. What did you make of Feige's comments that she's going to be the most powerful?
It's interesting because they're making their most powerful character a woman, and once this movie comes out, that'll quickly catapult her too close to the top in terms of female superheroes, and she will be the top female superhero from Marvel. So all of that is like great and wonderful in its own right. My only thing is from a movie standpoint. When you already have a Hulk and you already have a Thor and you bring in her with this power level, the power level he's talking about, like, how powerful is that? And
did you see the list from the Wikipedia page for Carl Danvers?
No, but I have a good idea what it is.
Yeah.
I got a good idea what Captain Marvel can do, which is pretty much a lot of everything.
She can literally produce force of a nuclear bomb with her fingertips.
See,
and she can withstand, hold it. She can hold up to 20 tons.
See, the problem...
And she's she can travel 6 times the speed of sound.
Okay, so she's not as fast as light. So, okay. She's got a limitation. The problem a lot of people have with Superman is that he's so powerful. How do you make him interesting when you put him up against people? That's my... It's not a concern for me with Superman. It's not really a concern with me with her.
Well, that's what Feige said, that their biggest issue was going to be finding the human relatability. And I think that's why they hired Brie Larson, because who's more identifiable than Brie Larson?
True.
The woman played a rape victim, trapped in a room, fathering mothering the child of her rapist. So, and she made it look adorable and cute. So, like...
I need to see that movie, but... Just what you just said, that means this movie, I have to be in a certain frame of mind to watch this. And I don't have that frame of mind all that often. So it's going to be a while before I see the room. But the character itself, I don't know all of the newer stuff Carol does, but I mean, she's an army person. And there's a lot of the Green Lantern thing, which they've said before, like she finds Mar-Vell and that's how she gets the powers. But the part of her story that I know that they can't go into is that's tied directly into the X-Men is when her dealing with Rogue and all that stuff.
They're going to deal more with the Kree side of it and the intergalactic side of it, which is another issue of where, how you tie her into the galactic side of everything going on with Thanos and all that. So,
I think it pretty much means that she'll be primarily set off of Earth, which is, I mean, Guardians do their own thing in space, and it just feels like a bunch of friends hanging out. For them, this could be like the actual like space cop.
Friends that don't hug.
No, they hug. They might not want to, but they get hugged. So I don't know. This could be like the law and order side of space, and see what happens with her.
Be interesting for sure. So let's move on to some random movie news as we end up wrap this episode up. Mulan did get a director. It is not Ang Lee.
No, his name's Alex Graves.
And this is the Sony version of Mulan, not the Disney version. Okay.
See, this is going to entail one of them.
Whoever goes first will, if they are a hit, will cause the other one to just go away.
But see, I don't think that's the only way that works. I think Sony can go first. And I'm the way this is going, it sounds like Sony is trying to go first. But the minute people don't see that castle with the Disney thing around it, they're going to be like, what is this? And then, like, as soon as that was almost in theaters, they'll be like, Disney's Mulan has got all this lined up, and everybody like, wait, what are y'all doing? I ain't gonna see that. I'm waiting for Disney. Why would I do that? So, yeah, Sony wants to be first. They should probably try to be first so they can, like, fool some people. Because as soon as Disney hits, it's gonna blow it out the water.
Because we know Andy Serkis is never making his Jungle Book movie.
But it's made. It's, like, sitting there. It's like... Like, all you've got to do is, like, finish some special... At this point, it's been, like, a year. So, the special effects are probably already done. It's just... Warner Bros. Is like, well, do we want to take a bath on this movie? Not really. So, we'll just sit it out.
Worked well for Fury Road.
Maybe he's going to go off and make this Lion King and forget about Jungle Book 2. We can sneak it in there. I think that's their only hope at this point.
Alright. Your thoughts on the Assassin's Creed trailer? The newest last great hope for video game movies.
It looks good, but most of the video game movies we've had, their trailers look good too. It is Michael Fassbender, so that it eases some concerns.
And Ubisoft is directly involved in the.
Yeah, and I mean, from what I've heard, from what I understand about this game, it tends to be more of a narrative kind of thing anyway. So,
but again, typical video game issue, you're in control of that story. You're watching something, and it's not a participatory experience at a theater unless you're in a virtual reality situation.
So it all comes down to how they portray the story. So hopefully that's good. I don't know enough about the game. Like, when I watched the trailer, I knew enough about the game to understand what's going on. But in that same context, what I know about the game doesn't really make a whole lot of sense to me. So I'm like, I know what's going on, but I don't really know what's going on. So just as a trailer and hopefully as a movie, it looks good. I don't know. I think it could still be good and not make money because of where it's at in the calendar.
December.
Yeah. That is... is it before?
After Rogue One.
See, that's... If it was in, like, the middle of January after Rogue One, okay. Then, like, the next week or so, I don't know, man. Particularly if Rogue One is decent and Vader, like, goes off on some people, it's not going to be good.
Which, by the way, extended canon did come out and say that there were Jedis that evaded Order 66 and Vader did hunt them down. They just didn't show it on camera.
Oh, so the thing I wanted to see, they didn't show me.
Right.
Thanks, Star Wars.
You know, there's a book that you can pick up for $19.95.
No. I lived through these prequels to explicitly get to the point where I saw Darth Vader kill the Jedi. Not the kids left in the house by themselves. The Jedi.
He had trouble with that one kid.
And that's the thing. He could have killed all the kids. And I still would have been upset. But I'd have been like, you know. But he killed all of them. And then there's like a 14-year-old like, nah, this is not happening. And
I've watched all my friends die.
Yeah. Now. And the 14-year-old almost won. No, Darth Vader, that's not us supposed to go.
So, your thoughts on the Rogue One trailer?
It was good. I expected more. I thought I would get more Vader. I thought I'd at least get like him light up the lightsaber or something. But
you've been waiting for that all the entire marketing campaign.
I really have, and they're not giving it to me, which is smart on them. But it gave us enough of the story, but not gave everything away.
And firmly put you between three and four.
I think it's you. You, if you know anything about the lower Star Wars a little bit, you should understand that this is not 8 and come before 4. You might need a little help somewhere, but this should kind of clear it up.
We'll see if there's no crawl. If there's no crawl, then that will be more confusing for people.
Yeah, with this trailer, I'm going to lean towards there will be a crawl, just to make sure.
All right. Gene Wilder dies and Warner Brothers comes out and says, we're doing a Willy Wonka reboot or sequel or something. Glass elevator. Help.
I'm normally the guy that's like, you want to reboot it? Fine. Reboot it. Knock yourselves out. And then...
we've done this before, though.
Exactly. They made Chester the Child Molester Willy Wonka and weirded everybody out. And it's like, okay, so...
It went from sunny, smiling Gene Wilder...
With a hint. He had a hint of darkness... And you could see it
in there, the tunnel.
But,
yeah,
but it was never like overt and weird and
creepy.
Creepy is a good word. This dude, like, did Tim Burton do that one?
Yes, that's Burton and Depp.
I knew it was Depp, but I was like, why does Johnny Depp look like this in my head? And then I thought of Tim Burton, and that's exactly why. So you. It's not so much rebooting the first one. It's because we've already had this one. And it was so bad. And people don't like it.
Which is why the idea of going glass elevator would be interesting. Because then you're doing a direct sequel.
Yes, but then...
But you're also in a position where Dole hated all of his movies.
Yeah.
Like, he hated the Gene Wilder version. And he would have been, like, calling for somebody to be fired after what Burton did.
I think he was still alive for that one. Well, no. I don't know. He wasn't. Gene Wilder was. He didn't like it.
Yeah.
So, because the second one, because of the nature of the second one and people don't like it, and then you add in the fact that people really, really like Gene Wilder, like, I know it's hard to replace somebody, but I think you can do it. But they failed so bad in replacing him the second time, I don't think they can do it right, and anybody's going to give them any sort of credit on this next guy.
It's a property that deserves to stay in the closet. Let's not take this one out. Let's not revive this IP.
The only way this works, this has to be absolutely perfect, and I don't know how you make this perfect, and I don't know who's the perfect cast for...
There's no obvious choice. There's no hit-by-bus list for... Gene Wilder's version of Willy Wonka.
Which means they can cast a guy that will end up being perfect, but the minute they cast him, no one is going to like him.
Ben Affleck as the Batfleck.
Yeah, and then he's going to have to be like Ben Affleck in Batman and versus Superman and turn it around in the movie. But we know lots of people that will just be like, I'm not going to like you regardless because I want it because of Gene Wilder.
Because this guy's dead.
Yeah.
I couldn't get my sequel because Dole refused to give up the rights to Glass Elevator.
That's right. He didn't like it.
No, he did not feel like Wilder's interpretation, which is like widely accepted as the perfect interpretation of Wonka, he didn't like.
I kind of want to read it now to see what does he think.
It's like Jumanji. It's not a thick book.
I've seen it. I actually have it at my house. I could go read it. But probably at this point, I'm just going to be so... have Wilder so much in mind, I'll probably never see...
Exactly. That's going to be the problem now. So, Chad, Captain Planet, he's a hero. He's going to take emissions down to zero.
Yep.
And a guy named Leonardo DiCaprio either wants to play him or at the very least, produce a movie about him.
I saw this headline. I'm like, there's no way in hell Leonardo DiCaprio is Captain America. Captain Planet. I read it and I'm like...
They did the Funny or Die skit.
The Funny or... And which is gold. And I love those things. Don Cheadle as Captain Planet is great. So seeing Leonardo producing it makes more sense, especially if you know like his
environmentalist message. And
yeah,
he'd been waiting 20 years to win an Oscar, and he used his Oscar speech time to preach about global warming.
Yeah, so now he's got this chance to do Captain Planet.
If there's one man in Hollywood who has enough credence to get Captain Planet movie made,
I guess it's him. I still don't think this movie gets made. I think there's absolutely zero chance that it gets made with Leonardo DiCaprio.
This was how he was going to spend his Oscar?
Yeah, I'm going to use all my Oscar goodwill and capital on making Captain Planet. A thing that most people don't even remember.
Hey, 90s nostalgia gone wild. Let's bring back Disney Adventures while we're at it.
I wouldn't oppose to that. But if it happens, I want to see him as Captain Planet just because it just sounds so ridiculous in my head. But there's like zero chance that he'll be Captain Planet. Him producing the movie, I go with it. I just don't think it'll ever happen. Unless he stars as Captain Planet, and I don't think that's going to happen.
Unless he stars as Captain Planet and then has Inarritu directing.
I can't even imagine that kind of stuff. What's he going to do? Actually, like, put him in some pollution? They're like walking around with some sludge up to their waist?
It's not like Captain Planet has the greatest rose gallery in history.
No, my brother used to have the toys, and I remember
the only one I ever remember is the woman that basically eye patch. Yeah.
I remember there's the yellow guy that looks like yellow bricks, and he's like irradiated, and they're Hoglish Greeley. I remember him. I remember his name. Big fat dude, he's got like his canines like sticking out of his mouth, and he's like he always eating stuff and like throwing stuff everywhere, like sloppily eating and stuff. Those are the ones that's as far as I got on his rose gallery. So to me, the yellow dude is the one that you go with, but Hoglish Greeley, because of his name, has to be in the movie.
Well, like I said, we are now officially the podcast of Inarritu directing Captain Planet, yeah. Starring Leonardo DiCaprio.
And he's going to... Leo will be fine because he's Captain Planet, so he'll be fine. But the Planeteers are going to die. Cause he's going to like lock him in a nuclear plant or something. Like, you've got to feel it. You've got to actually get this for you to get it, to feel it.
We must film around active radioactive waste.
Just going to kill 5 kids. Go ahead.
All right. Well, that'll about do it for this week's episode. If you want to keep up with the podcast, you can follow me on Twitter @BCWTigerFan.
And @TheMessTheory.
Thank you very much, and have a pleasant evening.